visiting with Scott Johnson with the IHSA, and he has released a book basically detailing, I think, the history of the IHSA Association work, Witten Porter, and the course of interscholastics. Porter is H.V. Porter. Witten is C.W. Witten, two men very instrumental in the creation of the IHSA, which was officially founded in 1922. As a backstory, Scott Johnson, I thought it was interesting in the introduction in terms of the motivation of this book. And I think it stemmed from a couple of pictures in the IHSA offices. Is that right?
Right. Well, we have pictures of these two gentlemen in our office, and we have a lot of their writings still available in our office, not only in the magazine that we used to publish, but lots of correspondence in our basement. Some of it dates back over a century. And with all that source information, I just felt like somebody ought to try to put something together on these two guys, because they were important, and they really spearheaded the development of the interscholastic movement, not only here in Illinois, but nationwide as well.
And when we talk about interscholastic sports and getting off the ground floor, so to speak, the big issue was when, you know, these basketball games or track and field events or football games would take place, there started to become concern over, well, player eligibility, rules, player safety, things of that nature. So a little bit about kind of, I don't know if you'd call it a grassroots effort, of how this effort began to basically sanction interscholastic athletics in Illinois and then in the nation.
Sure. Well, it really began right around the turn of the century, the 20th century, when school people here in Illinois began to realize that the interscholastic portion of their program wasn't going to go away, that they needed to incorporate interscholastic sports into daily life in the school and establish some control over it, because the students at that point were basically in control over it, and they were not capable, obviously, of making sure that officials were properly trained and that they were not taking care of eligibility at all. There were lots of problems with ringers and that type of thing. So it needed some kind of institutional control, and that's where the Illinois High School Association was formed, and many other state associations of similar nature were formed. Eventually, those groups got together and formed the National Federation of State High School Associations in the 20s, and that's when the movement really kind of took off, and that's when Witten and Porter stepped into the picture during the 20s, and they were the two most important people on the front, largely because the National Federation office was the Illinois High School Association office. They were one and the same. Witten was in charge of both organizations, and Porter was at his side for those first 12 years after he was hired, before he became the head of the National Federation.
And to say that it was, a smooth transition to sanction basically interscholastic athletics, that there were some, more than just growing pains, I mean, there was some real resistance, and most of it, right, in the early days, came from basically colleges who did not want to give up control of that.
That's exactly right. The colleges had a big stake in the interscholastic world in the early days, because in the beginning they were the ones that had the facilities. High schools didn't have facilities, especially for track. And so they ran their own meets. They invited high schools. They were very lax in most cases in vetting eligibility. And the high school people who were in charge of the associations, state associations, finally got fed up with that and wanted to establish their own power, I guess, over those events. And so you're right. There were some big battles, and the biggest one was with the University of Chicago and a very famous person in American sports history, Amos Alonzo Stagg, who ran a national basketball tournament after all the state tournaments were over. And it was really the drive to eliminate that national tournament that was led by C.W. Whitten in his role as the director of the National Federation that kind of brought things to a head. And there were some incredible battles during that time, which culminated in 1930.
And I think that the interesting backstory in all of that is then the press got involved, and I know the press gets involved in a lot of the, we'll call it the media now, in a lot of these issues. And then, you know, another big sports personality at the time that got involved and wanted to take on the association and the federation was Newt Rockne of Notre Dame fame. And I was telling you off the air, you know, that would be like today, basically, you know, Nick Saban and Craig Anderson, who's the current IHSA executive director, getting into it over something, or Mike Krzyzewski and Craig Anderson. I mean, those were big names, the biggest names of college sports at the time, taking on a guy like C.W. Whitten, who's relatively little known across the nation, and yet when it's all said and done, after those battles, the IHSA and the National Federation able to gain some support, a majority of support through those principals throughout the state and throughout the nation to really kickstart the IHSA.
Right. Yeah, Newt Rockne interjected himself into a battle that he really didn't need to with a newspaper article and then a letter that he wrote to the Federation. And that really provided some spark, I guess, some inspiration to the high school people. It ended up being, you know, high schools versus colleges. I don't want to make the colleges seem like they were necessarily the villains here, but a lot of the battles that they were fighting were just to kind of get what they thought was sensible control of the high school events away from colleges. And it wasn't just in these large-scale tournaments and meets, but also in terms of writing rules. The NCAA was in charge of writing rules for basketball and football, and the high schools felt that they deserved a much greater stake in writing those rules because most of the people who were playing football and basketball were high school players, and all of the benefits and all of the control was seated in the colleges, and they did not think that was right.
Yeah, and we talk about, you know, player safety issues, and I told you early in the book there's a passage for me that really stands out when we talk about the sport of football specifically and player safety issues now today with the heat acclimatization issue, the concussion protocol, things of that nature, where it's a much safer game, and basically meticulously almost every year there's a safety issue that comes up. But I thought this passage early in the book, and I'm quoting here, in football there were serious safety issues with the game itself. Whitten remembered it is, quote, a brutal or barbarous sport in those days, giving him doubts about the sustainability of football for high school competition, where broken legs, arms, noses, jawbones, teeth, and heads were of common occurrence, and fatalities were not infrequent. Eventually, the intervention of President Theodore Roosevelt was required before changes were made to the rules in an attempt to stem the carnage. And Theodore Roosevelt, by the way, I think was president from 1901 to 1909. So we fast forward to 2018, and I tell coaches, well, football really, well, I guess, was on trial back in from 1901 to 1908, and it's still on trial today. But it's those type of issues that garnered the attention for, hey, we need a sanctioning body to look at these type of issues and come up with rules that can adequately protect student athletes. And that's still an issue in 2018.
That's absolutely right. There's nothing that I wrote about in the book that happened 100 years ago that isn't really still an issue. You know, the degree might have changed a little bit, and some are worse and some are better, but all of those things are still on the table. And I guess you just never really solve a problem. You just kind of deal with it and try to make it better, but they never really go away.
I think the other thing that stood out for me and our rural audience is the rural roots that both C.W. Witt and H.V. Porter came from. I know conducting this interview in Alita remotely, and one of H.V. Porter's early stops was in Keysburg, Illinois, and I know a lot of small towns in his background with education, and I think C.W. Witten got his start, I think, over in rural Stark County. So there's a lot of rural roots involved in this, but then eventually the IHSA office and the Federation office would be in Chicago, but a lot of rural towns mentioned, I know, in this book.
Yeah, it really is kind of remarkable that these two guys, again, who I don't want to overstate, but they were really the most influential people in the interscholastic movement during a 20 to 30 year period, were from a tiny area centered on Peoria. Witten from maybe 30 miles north of Peoria and Porter 20 miles south of Peoria. They both went to Illinois State University, and they both spent a lot of time in central Illinois, and that is where the influence that kind of grew this whole movement and the National Federation, basically right out of central Illinois. And neither of these fellows, by the way, went to high school, is another aspect that I think people will find interesting. There were no high schools when Witten was young enough to attend. And Porter, the closest high school would have been in Pekin, and he lived too far away to go there. So they both went directly to college, and their careers took off after that.
Yeah, and you brought up, as we wrap up, the, you know, what you, when you did this book, what happened then. Basically, those issues are still happening today. And I know a lot of the back and forth with the media involving the IHSA of today, I guess it had nothing on 1922 through like 1940. There were some battles when Canute Rockne got involved and Amos Alonzo Stagg, and then all the writers basically in every part of the state. And I think that we were talking about off the air that I thought the interesting thing, and I didn't realize this, is basically back in that day, basically, sports editors and sports reporters, they also served as officials of organized athletic contests. So they got involved in that way, too. So I thought that was another big storyline in this book. And I thought H.V. Porter and C.W. Witten, they would heed very cautiously in their relationship with some of these editors and reporters around the state.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that was kind of a revelation for me, too, was that these guys were also officiating contests and then going home and writing about them, I guess. You know, we take our lumps now from the press, and sometimes deservedly so. But it's nothing compared to what was happening back in the 20s and 30s. These guys were really, they didn't pull any punches. And a lot of times, I think the criticism was very unfair, and I kind of point out some cases where that was true, and they gave back pretty well too, not necessarily in public, but in some of their private correspondence. You know, they let people know that they were being treated unfairly.
All right. Well,
it's all in the book.
Yeah, and it's a great read. Again, it's association work, Witten Porter and the Course of Interscholastics. I know it looks at these two great men, but to me, it's really kind of a microcosm of how the IHSA was formed. What was your gain in all of this, or what did you pick up, or maybe something that you didn't know, or there was something that really stood out like an aha moment for you when you did the book? Was there anything like that for you?
Well, I guess I, you know, went into it with kind of an idea about what these two gentlemen would be like, maybe because I'd read a little bit already about them or the stuff that they had written. But, you know, in 4 years of research and writing, I really come away with the impression that they were incredibly sincere and true to their to their cause. You know, I did not find anything, and I did a lot of searching, you know, that would have impugned them or that would have said they were, you know, doing something to harm their cause or, you know, kind of doing some backroom dealings or something like that. They were just really straight shooters, and I can't imagine that every person who's been involved with a state association is like that, but we were lucky to have two guys that were at the beginning, because it really set the stage for the entire interscholastic program.
I know, Scott, the book has just been released, and I know the IHSA, they're hosting the National Federation of High School Athletic Associations this week, coming up, and I think the book, you're going to share the book with that audience. How can people get their hands on this book if they want to purchase it?
We haven't put anything on our website yet because we weren't sure exactly how many books we were going to be giving away at the Federation, and therefore how many we would have left over for sale. But I would encourage anybody who is interested in it to just drop me an email at the IHSA, sjohnson@ihsa.org, and we'll see if we can hook them up with something after we get back from the conference next week.
I think you'd already indicated before, when is your next book you're going to do? And I think the answer is never. No, I know you, there was a lot of time and effort devoted into this work. So basically, if you do another book, it's going to be a while.
Well, it certainly won't be before I retire. Let's put it that way. But yeah, there's a lot of work in here, but it was worth it. It was worth it.
All right. So again, contact sjohnson@ihsa.org. I tell you, if you like the IHSA, the history of the IHSA, and I tell you, a great storyline here with C.W. Witten and H.V. Porter. This is a great book, Association Work, Witten, Porter, and the Course of Interscholastics, as written by our good friend Scott Johnson. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.